IVM.
Hi, everybody. Just wanted to ask everyone for a quick favor. We're running a brand survey right now and would really appreciate it if you could let us know what you think about the advertising on IVM. Go to ivmpodcast.com/survey and do let us know. As part of this, we'll be selecting 10 random participants and sending them some IVM swag. So do fill out those surveys.
Hi, and welcome to Noya Kanoon. This is Amber from EM Nara Ventures. And here we have another brilliant episode of Noya Kanoon with an interesting personality, a dear friend of mine by the name of Trisha. You must have heard her name. She's a author, writer, content writer, civil activist, constitutional activist, and whatnot. And now I like her to introduce herself because we can't do justice to her honors. So Trisha, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And abruptly bumping into me at GK so that I could find you and get you on the show, because I wouldn't have otherwise been able to reach out to you. And yeah, welcome, you know, to the show. And then just please do the honors, let the audience know how much of a genius you are.
Yeah, thank you, Amber, for having me here. But yeah, you caught me at a very wrong time when I was actually on a break that morning. Thank you for the introduction, but yeah, that's an exaggeration of what I do. I'm basically a publisher. I work with an independent publishing house called Niyogi Books. And apart from that, I also consult with an organization called Belong, wherein we are currently developing an app for D&I, diversity and inclusion. I also work with an heritage activist who's trying to rewrite or retell how history is written and perceived by us. Apart from that, I am a strong proponent of Indian literature in translation, and I'm trained as a classical dancer. I trained in Bharatanatyam for 20 or more years, and so on. Yeah, that's about it.
So that's her introduction. That's about it, as she closed it with. But more qualified than what I am currently. So the host is underqualified. But thanks, Trisha, for being here. Now let's start. You have very interesting books with you. You have very interesting a publishing house that gives us very good material, I would say, and very good content in terms of what you're penning. So I want to understand, and you've had your twist with law, you've had your twist with speech, as I would say, still stand. So how has that journey been? Because see, Trisha, most of our listeners are, of course, you know, coming in from a legal angle, but books are the surmountable reason, I would say, behind all lawyers and how all the success is. So it provides with immense knowledge, right? So let's talk about your twist in that sense. I don't want to go into details, but even if you can broad brush and talk about, what do you talk about freedom of expression and how do you perceive it in India?
Yeah, so in a publishing industry, especially in the field of books, first of all, law and literature, they're like opposite word plays, in the sense that literature is actually a reflection of the society, the social norms and the beliefs and everything around it. So a literature, if it does not address these issues, it's kind of vacant. And we at Niyogi Books, we focus on a lot of these issues, which may not be directly involved with the legal aspect, but talks about things like poaching through literature, through fiction. Talk about the imbalance in our society. For example, we take up Dalit literature and we talk about it very proudly and significantly. And it includes autobiographies. For example, I did this one book, which is an autobiography of a manual scavenger. It was originally in Kannada and then we translated into English. And I almost wept when I actually read the manuscript, because again, there are so many things which comes under the purview of the legal system, the judiciary and everything. But somewhere it has to be talked about and spoken about to spread awareness. So that is one of the brushes that we have with the legal system and the judiciary and about it. When it comes to human rights as well, freedom of expression is very important to us. We need to be able to express our opinions, but in a very well documented and factually verified and reasoned opinion should be used in the process. Many a times, if we don't go through a legal fact check for our books, we could actually land into trouble. But if it is factually verified and reasoned well, then whatever may be the voice of the government at that point of time, we should be able to publish it. But it's easier said than done. We know several examples of banned books. For example, we know Animal Farm, the famous Animal Farm book, is still banned in Cuba and North Korea. We also know that a couple of books, like I think, Lady Chatterley's Lover was banned. Brave New World by Aldous Huxley was banned in Ireland, and so on and so forth. Like Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury was also banned. And so similarly, we have a lot of books which were banned by the authority at that point of time. So it's easier said than done. As I said, it's easier said than done.
No, and you know, when I talk about freedom of expression, you know, since you know, people, and I would say people who are authoring books or writing, there is an emotion to connect with when you're expressing. And it's got nothing to do with, you know, when you're writing or penning your thoughts, it's got nothing to do with how politically correct it could sound or not, right? And the art is only about expression. But again, we do also talk about that, you know, there have to be reasonable restrictions around the world, not only in India, on certain type of expressions, which might not be considered generic or apt at that point of time. Like I would talk about the Soviet era, you know, where some of the most amazing good reads were not allowed. Like Sherlock Holmes was a concept which was not known all across, I remember, during Joseph Stalin's time. And people of Russia never knew about that. And they ended up losing a valuable part of them, right? That is the bad side of things, I would say. Their expression goes a tad bit overboard, right? And not overboard in the sense that the expression was bad, but the government goes overboard with restricting books that might not cause an upheaval, but an ideology causes it to get restrained. Now, talking about the Indian diaphragm, let's talk about our society. We are multicultural. We are not ethnically aligned in a way that we have only one dominant religion or a caste culture or subculture. We are so diversified and there are so many different aspects to it. Do you feel the freedom of expression should have a restriction in a way in India?
Well, the only restriction for me is fact check. You should be factually correct and verified. That's the only restriction I see when we are writing something. It's not because, it's just a moral duty and responsibility to put forth the correct fact. Sometimes if we distort the fact and not to balance it both sides, it gives a distorted view of a subject. And that is where my only concern is. And that's the only concern that I have. I haven't ever mended my language or anybody of my author's language. The only thing I've worked on is fact check, which is the most important thing in publishing for me.
No, and I would agree with you, because if your arguments are based on facts and the factual situation is one which is within the dimensions of law, I don't think there's an issue with expression. The only issue with expression that comes into forefront, and I tell my audience with freedom of expression in Article 19 and going further, is that when it leads to inciting of violence, and that's a thin line of difference, right? What is incitement of violence has different judgments, has different interpretations and different operations, but there's a framework to it. Don't you feel as a publisher, I mean, you'll have all kinds of content coming to you, the audience has to be mature enough to realize not to get their emotions take the better of them or be flagrant about it. I think that is the level of tolerance we need at the grassroots level before we even head to the government side of things. Because the government represents the will of the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. So there's a small personal example and an example from the publishing industry that I'll just share with you. As a dancer, a person who has performed on stage and other dancers of classical dance, we realized over the years the understanding of the dance has gone down. At first, we were connoisseurs of classical art forms. Right now, it felt that the understanding or the appreciation of art has gone down over the years. Maybe we are not immersed into it, or we are not, we don't have much conversation around it in our surroundings, that we miss out on those nuances. Now, this holds true for any art, be it literature, be it a visual art, be it a performance art. It holds true for any art. But having said that, there was this one example. I wanted to take the example of Perumal Murugan in 2014, and he faced moral outrage over the publication of his book, One Part Woman. And its publisher, Kalachu Vadu, that's in Tamil, stood by the author at every step of the way. Now, in this case, if we were matured enough, if the audience was matured enough, there would not have been a moral outrage. But if they aren't, and if it led to a lot of violence on the street, a lot of protests and things were happening, the local authorities got involved. And as a result, the legal action, the legal domain came into picture. Now, this had to be doused. Otherwise, it was breaking the law and order of the country. But as a result to all of this, Perumal Murugan had said that I will stop writing, and he moved away from the place that he was in, and the unrest was eased. But at that point of time, we realized that the role of audience is equally important as that of the writer or the publisher. And thus, you are absolutely right when you say that we as readers need to be more tolerant, more understanding, and than being reactionary to all the words that are written out. You debate, there are so many forums available to talk about it. And that is kind of, I thought, is missing. And now with this era where digital space is like, all pervasive, we have more opportunities to do that. And we encourage, I think the entire publishing industry is encouraging people to interact and talk and give voice and give feedback. Like in economics, we all know in the economic policy also, there are three feedbacks: exit, voice, and loyalty. Okay. So loyalty is great, but it's not always wanted. We also want exit and voice so that we understand how, as writers also, we are able to give you content which requires to be read. And that's where the audience comes into play. And that's why they make a very important stakeholder in the publishing industry.
No, absolutely. And when I speak about this, when I discuss this, at the forefront, people tell me it is, you know, that Asia is not, or I would say Middle East, as they would say, including Asia, is ethnically so flagrant that authors don't feel comfortable, or publishers don't feel comfortable having their publication circulated, and they would rather prefer to be in a Western democracy because it gives them the ease of expression without having a throwback, or I would say a reaction which they actually did not want to incite. It was only about expressing a side of a story which was always unheard. You know, whether it was Taslima Nasreen or so forth, so on. And I do understand, you know everything. I mean, I don't say that they don't have to be reasonable restrictions. There has to be, because nothing can go unhinged. Nothing can be totally, allowed at a larger scale. There has to be reasonable restrictions on everything, whether it's your freedom, whether it's your expression. Then it's a balance, I would say, which comes in. But let's leave that alone, and I'll now come to the next part of the things, which is, in your experience, you're a young individual, and I would say, and fairly experienced at this age, to have been into publishing and given out some great, good reads. What would you suggest from a publisher side, from a citizen side, to people around that who would want to get into this field? I mean, I would want you to, probably lay an example.
Yeah, you are fairly young as well. It's not just me. And I don't know if I am at the right position in my life to give any suggestion of that kind. But there are certain things, of course, that I've gone through and I could share them with you. For example, when an author if you want to become a publisher or you want to become an author, they're two different spectrum completely. For authors, there are certain things that you need to know before you write a book or before you get to publish, before you get published. First of all, it's not easy to find a publisher where your book would fit in whose catalog your books would fit in. Different publishers have different directions, and we need to understand the direction before publishing them. But finding a publisher, the first thing I would tell to every author is do not share your complete manuscript with any publisher. The first step shouldn't be sharing your manuscript, your hard work with anybody. That's the first step. There are submission guidelines which tells you to share maybe a synopsis of the book and a few sample chapters and things like that. So the first step should be to give and submit only these details, because I understand a lot of there is malpractice even in publishing, and I won't deny that, but we have to be very careful on that aspect as well. So the first step should always be share only a bit of what you've written. It is only after a publisher, go through the background of the publisher, fact check, that's the most important thing. You have to know the reputation of a publisher before you proceed with this, with your manuscript. So if a publisher or when the publisher perhaps likes the idea but is not able to gauge enough of what your manuscript is like, most of the time the most important thing is to do, it is only then that the publisher will ask you for the full manuscript. And when the publisher asks you the full manuscript, that is the time when you take the leap of faith. But it's always better to have a timestamp with you. For example, that you've written it. So you could just, simple things, just email it to yourself. You know that you've written it, or your Word file has timestamp wherever you've typed it. It has a timestamp. So you know that basically this is what you've written and when you've written it. And then only then send it to a publisher. There needs to be a sense of trust, but to develop that trust, you need to do your background research. You have to find out about the publisher's reputation before you reach out to them. And then, and only then, send your manuscripts. You have to have trust in them and go forward with it. So that's the first thing I suggest every author to do, because without this, if you go to I don't want to take the name of any place, there is a high possibility of plagiarism happening also. In country, we are dealing with, in India and surrounding areas, we are dealing with plagiarism even before publishing, and definitely after publishing also. We see a lot of books going out in the market which are plagiarized. And as a result, authors do not get the due royalty they're supposed to do. So due diligence is very important when you're reaching out to a publisher, a traditional publisher, independent or multinational. That's the first thing. And if you want to be a publisher, then just like any other business, you have to do all the necessary detail, all the necessary work, the paperwork, the trademark registration, everything that you have to do. So does that answer your question, Amber?
It answers most of my question, but now we'll shift to the last segment before I close with you. And the last segment would be the D&I initiative, which you're talking about. All right. Okay. And I want to understand from you, of course, it stems from a thought process that you have, which is, of course, doing something for the community. And of course, as a creative person, I would understand, as a citizen, I would understand it's a responsible thing to do. What is it all about? Can we talk about the D&I perspective here? Because we had a very brief discussion and I could not elucidate with you what all it was all about. But could you just talk about that and the legal domain around it? What prompted you to do this?
Say, since I am not from the legal fraternity, I might not be able to answer the entire legality of it. Yeah. But I'll tell you a little bit about why I wanted to get into it. In my publishing house as well, we talk about a lot of subjects like the rights of women, the property rights of women, and et cetera, et cetera. For example, we just did a book on the widows in West Bengal and their rights. And despite a lot of ease that has come around with new laws and everything, there is a social aspect. The social aspect doesn't let us implement those seamlessly. We still stigmatize a lot of things. And so not just the law, the implementation of the law is perhaps the most difficult part of anything. So that is where we wanted to get, I wanted to be involved in a project around diversity and inclusion. And then I was working on things around mental health, because we published books on mental health as well, and LGBTQ as well, and all the other aspects. So I was working with an organization called Belong. So when they asked me to join them as an advisor, I said, absolutely, that's going to happen. And so we started working on this app, through which we would like to spread awareness about diversity and inclusion through literature, through interviews, through podcasts and things like that. So, for example, the most important book that I was focusing on is The Second Sex by Simone de Beauvoir. And similarly, we were talking about lot of literature and books being written around these subjects. So this was what we are trying to do with it. It's currently in the beta phase, and we are starting young in the sense that we want to start reaching out to children about the LGBTQ rights, Dalits and caste system and mental health, all these things which are being stigmatized. You have a better background actually on the legal aspect of D&I. And even though we had a brief conversation, I heard a lot of things of what you were doing. Why don't you say a few things that you did in this segment?
No, of course. We've covered, I've done a different session altogether with Suresh Ramdas on this, where we talk about, everything which is in place with regards to LGBT rights, about diversity, about trainings, about importance of corporate presence, importance of sensitization, importance of, having the right kind of HR policies. So, why I asked you this was because it's generally people associate this from a legal perspective, that only lawyers tend to get into any of this module. But I would want to highlight that, it's not just a lawyer thing right away for someone to say that, only lawyers take stand on these things. It's more about being an aware citizen. It's more about being someone who feels for the cause and then has the right to express the same. And doing so does not belittle anyone. It's rather your right to freedom of expression, of voicing your concerns and channelizing it into something which makes the difference to the world you exist in. So, Trisha, thank you so much. We've had a very short conversation today. I plan to do more of these series with her, because today I just wanted my audience to get oriented as to what she brings to our table. And next time when we have her, we're going to specifically talk about literature from a legal perspective, as to how politics and literature is intermingled, and how it does not fare into what people generally feel, and how difficult it is to publish something which is intermingled in a way where creativity and the legal side of things get jumbled. Patricia, thank you so much for being here. The next episode, surely we'll be taking time from you and getting back to our audience with. But it was lovely having you. I really wanted people to know about the kind of work you're doing, and that is why this was more of an orientation today. And then we're going to talk about these diabolical topics which you and I were discussing the other day, and take it forward from there. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On the Edge is a Sledges cricket podcast. In the first half, Ashwin is joined by Varun to wrap India's ODI tour of Sri Lanka. In the second half, DJ joins the party to discuss the first T20 international between India and Sri Lanka. If you'd like to hear more about this match, former Indian cricketer Sobha Kareem joins Rajiv Mishra on Khel Niti and they talk some more about it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're really excited to announce a new show, a show about crypto with Rohan Joshi. He's going to dive deep and demystify all this crypto stuff that we've been hearing about. And let me tell you a little bit more about stuff that's going on the network really quickly. Congratulations to Maru Kinayat, who celebrates 50 episodes of The Note with a discussion on health as a fundamental right. On Paisa Vesa, Anupam talks to Harsha Chetanwala of MyWealthCrow.com. Zarina Punawala is starting a new mini-series on emotional intelligence. Do check out the kickoff episode on the Empowering series. And Simplified talks about semiconductors. Do follow us on social media. We're IVM Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And remember, if you're enjoying this show or any other show for that matter, please do tell a friend. That's really helpful for us. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors on the network this week. They make this all possible. Thank you very much. Siet, Cred, Global Victoria, Bank of Baroda, Intuit India, Lenovo, and CoinSwitch Kuber. We really appreciate your support.
Given the unprecedented times our nation is going through, where positive is now a dreaded word, Smile India gets you delightful news from across the country about people and places that continue to spread the much-needed hope and positive vibes. I am Shifa Maitra, and you can hear Smile India with me every Thursday on the IVM app, website, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Oh, and did I tell you, Smile India is available in both English and Hindi.